All right. Thank you very much for having me. I have used this title for over 10 years, but the contents are evolving, okay? So please pay attention. All right, we all know that dark matter exists in our universe. 27% of the universe, the energy in the universe is made out of dark matter, right? So remaining part is like ordinary matter, 5%, and the dark energy is about 70%. And we don't know what dark matter is, but we do have a lot of many candidates like WIMPs and axions and so on and so forth. Over the past 40 years, we have been trying to find dark matter particles in laboratories, but we haven't seen any particle signals yet. So I'd like to use this sentence in a famous Chinese poem to summarize the current dark matter search status, right? So here, let me read this in Chinese. If you read it, you know what it means. So he exhausted all avenues in heaven and the netherworld, boundless and vast as they were. He could not bring her existence to light, right? It's about a love story, but really applies to understand the current dark matter search status. But I think it's a good time for us to think about our approach to the dark matter problem, right? So why do we assume that dark matter has to interact with standard model particles aside from gravity, right? So this is our wishful thinking, but this may not be true. But what if dark matter does not interact with us? So in that case, it would be a nightmare scenario. And probably in this case, astrophysical observations would be the only way to probe the nature of dark matter. So then the question is how far you can push, right? So my attitude is hope for the best, but prepare for the worst, right? So now let's take one step back to look at our traditional or vanilla dark matter model. This is called a collisionless core dark matter. And you just assume that there's one new particle, you add a new particle to the standard model, and it's massive. Depending on how you call it massive, you know, in the WIMP case, it's like 100 GeV issue, but for the axion, that can be very light. But it's really assumed, you know, it only has a gravitational interaction with standard model particles. That's all you need. And this CDM model works very well explaining large-scale structure of the universe. But on small scales, there are a number of issues we have debated for many years. By small scales, I mean dwarf galaxies, subhalo, even galaxy clusters. So in this talk, I'm going to go through some of those issues and try to argue that the CDM assumption may break down on those small scales and a new physics is needed. So let's go to this kind of the famous core versus cusp problem. So this plot shows the rotation curve of a dwarf galaxy. And this is stellar contribution, this is a gas contribution. So if you add them up, you don't get the observed one. So that's the reason why we need dark matter. In CDM, the density profile is parametrized by this so-called NFW profile, and you can fix the parameter such that you can fit the outer region in the inner region and overpredict the rotation curve. The reason is the density is very cuspy, go towards the inner region, while the data prefers to have a shallower density core. Right? So if you look at the red curve, the agreement is very good. So then people thought, well, maybe all dwarf galaxies need a dark matter density cores, right? But this is not the case. Oops. All right, so I think somehow I deleted one slide. So, but this is not the case. If you have a large sample of spiral galaxies, you realize some dwarf galaxies prefers to have density cores. Some dwarf galaxies prefers to have a cuspy profile. So as shown here, so each blue point represents a galaxy, and you take the galaxy, you look at the circular velocity in the region at 2 kpc, and you plot against its maximally observed circular velocity, right? So then you can see it contains about 200 galaxies, and you can see for a given Vmax, there's a bigger spread. The spread is a factor of 4, right, from this small dwarf galaxy here up to like big systems. And the black curve is the median value in CDM Odell simulation you get. And the red band is the hydrodynamical simulation of CDM. Okay, if you add a variance and this curve go up and you get the curve like this. But the spread, observed spread is much bigger in observations compared to the theoretical prediction. So that is a big challenge. So I'm going to argue that, or I'm going to show you that the observed diversity can be explained if the dark matter has strong self-interactions. So at this point, the only assumption you have to make is dark matter has collisions aside from gravitational interactions. It can be measured by this cross-section per mass, right? So let's say if the cross-section is a 1 cm² per gram issue, it's close to the nuclear cross-section. So then something interesting will happen. So this plot shows a density profile for a halo. This is initial CDM NFW profile. And if you turn on the self-interactions, 2 cm² per gram, and you let your computer wait for 10 gigayears, you'll get a shallow density profile. Right? So why this happens? So this plot shows the dark matter velocity dispersion at a functional radius. It measures the temperature of the dark matter particles inside the halo. And this is the CDM curve. If you go towards the inner region, the velocity dispersion is small. So that's the reason why the density builds up. Now you turn on collisions. The collisions will transport heat from the outer region to the inner region. And those inner particles will gain kinetic energy to take a larger orbit. And that's really the density goes down, right? And this curve shows the velocity dispersion profile for self-interacting dark matter. It's nearly a constant. So this is very interesting. From thermodynamics, we know that if the velocity dispersion is a constant, temperature is a constant, which means this inner region is thermalized. So what self-interactions do is to thermalize the inner halo. So that's it. And because of this, we can use a lot of techniques or knowledge we learn from thermodynamics then to apply to understand the dark matter. So essentially, this I've been doing for almost 10 years now. So why this kind of a simple picture can solve the diversity problem? So let's go through this. So this plot shows, the diversity problem as we have discussed. And let's look at the galaxies in those regions first. These are the galaxies prefers to have a large density cores. The points are below this CDM prediction. If you take a close look of those galaxies, you realize those are the dark matter dominated galaxies. And if you take the isothermal distribution now, this is the total potential, this is replaced by the dark matter potential. And you know that for dark matter dominated system, self-interactions will generate a larger density cores and lower the circular velocity. As shown here, the circular velocity of the functional radius. This band is CDM prediction, gray band. The blue band is SIDM prediction, assuming cross-section 3. And if you look at the lowest point here, right, it's 20 kilometers per second, and you can get 20 kilometers per second. Because if I plot the error bars, it would be too busy. I'm going to show you the individual curves.
But what is like the variance?
And I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you. Yeah. All right. Now, let's look at the galaxies in this region. Those are the galaxies consistent with the CDM predictions. They do not need a density core. They are fine with the cusp profile. Right? So to explain the full range of diversity, you have to explain the both. Right? People usually say, well, self-interactions will generate a larger density cores. Then if this were the case, then you wouldn't be able to explain the galaxies in this region. So those are the galaxies are actually dominated by baryons in the central region. Those are so-called high surface brightness galaxies. Since it's dominated by baryons in the inner region, you replace the total potential by the baryonic potential. Now in this case, the dark matter central density is sensitive to the baryon concentration. If the baryon concentration is high, right? So here we show, then the central dark matter density increases, and the core size becomes smaller and smaller, as shown here, right? So this curve is SIDM only. If you add a baryon potential, go towards this direction, you increase the baryon concentration, and the central density increases, and the core size becomes smaller and smaller. So that's what you need to explain the galaxies in this region. Those are the galaxies consistent with a cusp profile. Right. So in the first paper, we fitted to 30 galaxies. So here I will show you like 8 examples, right? You pick up like 8 examples, and all of them have about the same V max, maximum observed circular velocity. If you look at the inner region, the spread is a factor 2. So now you can see the error bus, okay? So for those examples. The solid curves are from SIDM fits, so you can fit all of them. And we also checked with n-body simulations, right? All those fits are from this isothermal kind of model from ideal gas system, and really agrees with the n-body simulation result. So then we take a bigger sample. This is from Spark data sample. This is the biggest sample you can get for the purpose. So we fitted 147 galaxies. So here we show you like, you know, 4 panels. Each panel contain the galaxies, have about the same mass. And you can see that, you know, the spread is really big. It's about a factor of 4 in the inner region from this small system to bigger systems. And then each side of the curve is from the SIDM fit. Okay. Questions? All right, so it works well. And the only price you pay is you just add one more parameter, it's a cross-section, right, per mass. And it can explain that the diverse rotation curves are spiral galaxies, and this problem has puzzled us for more than 20 years. All right. So if you take your theory, your model seriously, you want to apply it to everywhere, right, not just like spiral galaxies in the field, but there are other galactic systems. So here we show that this is dwarf galaxies of the Milky Way. Okay, each blue point represents a dwarf galaxy in the Milky Way. Right? So we can try to understand those systems. So we were very excited because of the success in explaining spiral galaxies. So we think that the idea may work as well to explain stellar kinematics of dwarf galaxies in the Milky Way. But some unexpected result comes up. So let me show you like 2 examples. One is called a Draco, okay, the other is called a Fornax. If you fit the stellar kinematics and you can figure out what is the density profile, okay, with some assumption for these two systems. So it turns out that Draco is here. This band is the density profile for Draco if you want to fit the data, stellar kinematics. This is the Fornax. Although the error bars are large, but overall you can see that the central density can off by one order of magnitude for these two examples. So which means the dark matter distributions are also diverse in the satellite galaxies. Right? So if I naively borrow this isothermal distribution model to fit the data, you realize the Fornax, the cross-section is about 10 centimeters squared per gram, and for Draco, had to be around 0.3 centimeters squared per gram. Actually, Draco is consistent with CDN. Right? So then your heart is broken. Right? So the idea was very successful for spiral galaxies, but once you consider dwarf galaxies in the Milky Way, it does not work so easily. Right? So, but there's one interesting point here is that those dwarf galaxies are different from spiral galaxies we discussed, because those dwarf galaxies are associated with the Milky Way, right? So you have to take into account the environment. They are not isolated system. So this plot, actually it's a movie I'm going to show you, is that how like a halo, subhalo, evolve in the tidal field of the Milky Way. Right, so this is the initial condition, okay, this is the initial halo. You can see if you look at the very inner region, it becomes very bright, you know, which means the density is high. Right? So if I release it, see what happens. All right.
So stable.
Huh? So stable. All right, let me just click here. So what you can see is, it goes like this after tidal evolution, right? And after 10 gig years, you even couldn't find where the center of the halo is, right? Because the halo lost majority of its mass in the tidal field. So you have to take that into account in your modeling, right? So after you take this into account, sorry, let me just, oops. All right, let's take it into account. So after you take into account, some magical gonna happen. So this plot shows very busy plot, I apologize. And you take a dwarf galaxy, let's say you fix the initial condition, right? This is the mass, this is the concentration, and you let it evolve in the Milky Way's tidal field. You ask, what happens? What is the density profile after the evolution? So this plot shows the black curve is initial condition. It's NFW halo. The black dot is the CDN. If there's no interactions, you get a shallow, you get, you know, shift a little bit lower in the inner region. In the outer region, it shift quite significantly. That is because of mass loss. That makes sense? Right? Now, if you look at the self-interacting case, the red one is 3 cm² per gram, right? The blue one is 5 cm² per gram. This purple one, magenta one, is 10 cm² per gram. So this is crazy result, because in this case, if you increase the cross-section, the central density increases. The behavior is completely opposite if you look at the field of the galaxy. It turns out for a field of galaxy, the central density will be here. You will not see those kind of spikes. So something unusual happened if the halo is in the Milky Way's tidal field. That is because the core collapse happens. So very roughly speaking, for a self-gravitating system, like the halo, it has negative heat capacity, right? So which means if you extract more energy from the system, the system becomes hotter. Okay? So this is very unusual. But this process, the core collapse does not happen for CDN, because once the halo is visualized, okay, so the gravitational energy is related to kinetic energy. Right? Now, if you turn on self-interactions, the heat will be transported from inner region to the outer region. Right? So this process can happen in principle. But if for a halo in the field, the process is very, very slow. Now, if you put the halo in the tidal field, you will speed up this process. The reason is the following. So this plot shows the velocity dispersion profile that I discussed. This is a CDM, initial CDM, right? If you go out, the velocity dispersion is higher. So if you turn on self-interactions, the heat will go from out to the inner region. So now, if you put a halo in the tidal field, there's a mass loss at 2 GeV. The curve looks like this. At 4 GeV, the curve looks like this. So now, now you can see that inner temperature is hotter than outer temperature. So heat will go out from the outer region, from the inner region to the outer region, right? So around 8 GeV, so you can see the negative gradient is established. So heat will always go out from, go from the inner region to the outer region. So core collapse happened. So eventually, the halo, the central density, becomes high and high, right? So this may explain the Draco. Draco prefers to have a high density, right? But if this phenomenon occurs for every dwarf galaxies, then you're also getting the trouble, because for galaxy like Fornax, you need to have a larger density cores, right? So which means core collapse should not happen for Fornax, but it happened for Draco. So then what controls that? It turns out this core collapse time is very sensitive to the concentration. So if the concentration is high, then more dark matter is distributed inside of the, in the inner region. For completely different reasons, we derive an analytical formula. It turns out that, if you reduce this concentration by 20%, core collapse wouldn't happen. Right? So this explains why you can get both cusp-B profile for Draco and a Fornax, a larger density course with a fixed cross section. So you have to take that into account. Right? So just reminding you that this is a cross section we take to fit spiral galaxies in the field. Right? So in this case, we can see that SIDM can simultaneously explain the diverse dark matter distributions in both satellite galaxies and the field galaxies. Yeah.
What is the effect on dynamical friction?
So in this case, the dynamical friction we checked is not so important. For that, so you worry that the dynamical friction will affect the halo motion, right? For the case we consider, the dynamical friction is not important.
I guess I don't have a sense of when it is important this much.
So why this is not important?
Yeah. So generally, I would think that the tail behind the object, right, will not be able to be as concentrated. So it should, dynamical friction should be reduced.
Yeah, so you can check the time scale for dynamical friction in this case for subhalo is much longer than age of the galaxy. Yeah. All right, so that's all good. All right, so now you may wonder if there's any evidence about this kind of scenario. So we look into the Gaia data. So this plot shows the central dark matter density as a function of pericenter. So the pericenter is the closest distance between the subhalo and the galactic center. If it's smaller, it means the tidal effect is stronger. Okay, and this contains the brightest, dwarf galaxies in the Milky Way. There's a clear anti-correlation between the central density, given some radius, versus the pericenter. Right, so Draco is here. It has a small pericenter, tidal effect is strong, and the central density is high. That indicates maybe the core collapse happens in this galaxy. The Fornax is here, the larger pericenter, but the central density is low. All right. So we're gonna move on to apply this idea to other systems. So these are the two very, very extreme outliers. It's very, very interesting outliers. Just measured very, very recently. Okay, so this one actually was discovered in 2000, just last year. Okay, early last year. This one, people discovered it long time ago, maybe in 1980s, and 2 years ago, the Dragonfly team made a new measurement. So this is called the NGC-1052 DF2. This is called the DF4, and the reason why they got this name is because they associated with this big elliptical galaxy, right? So these are the two extremes, very interesting extremes. Why? Because of the dark matter content. So give you a reference. For Milky Way, the dark matter mass to the stellar mass ratio is about 30. Okay. This value is a minimum value because, you know, the star formation efficient star formation is very efficient in the Milky Way. For DF2 and DF4, the stellar mass is about 10 to the 8 solar mass. Right? So from canonical galaxy formation model, you would expect the dark matter to the stellar mass ratio should be about 200. If you go to smaller system, actually the star formation efficiency becomes smaller and the system is more dominated by dark matter. But from observation, we find this ratio is about 1, or even less than 1. They say that to explain stellar kinematics, you don't need dark matter at all. Right? So this is crazy. So the question is, can we explain this in the standard picture? So one idea is that because these two dwarf galaxies or ultra-diffuse galaxies are related very close to this big elliptical galaxies, so maybe this so-called tidal effect is important. And the way I'm seeing that, if a subhalo evolves inside in the tidal field, it can lose most of its mass. Right. So here I just submitted last night actually. So we constructed 3 benchmark models, benchmark cases. One is CDM, SIDM3, SIDM5. Right? So initially, you put a halo mass to be 6 times 10 to the 10 solar mass, and this is stellar mass. Right? If you look at the initial ratio, it's about 200. This is the canonical value that you would expect. Then you put those halos in the tidal field, you let it evolve. So after 11 GeV, this is the number you get. The halo mass is reduced by a factor of 400. But the stellar mass only reduced by about a factor of 2. Right? So if you take the ratio, it's about 1. That's what you need to explain the data. So this is shown here. Right? So although the mass loss rate changes for different systems, for different cases in the middle, but eventually you will get the same, about the same mass. This is by construction. So it looks like even CDM works, but there's a price to pay, is that for CDM to work, the initial halo had to have very, very low concentration. So we wanted a lot of the dark matter mass to be distributed in the outskirt to speed up this mass loss process. Right? So it turns out this is a 4 sigma away from the cosmological medium. Right? So the probability is really low. If you increase the cross-section, the probability increases. Right? If you go to SID5, for example, it's close to the medium. The reason is that self-interactions lead to core formation and boosting tidal mass loss. So another kind of check is to look at the baryon distributions. So this is the stellar density at the functional radius. This curve is the initial condition. This is CDM, SIDM3, SIDM5. So you can see if you increase the cross-section, the baryons distributions becomes more diffuse. Right? So that is because the stars expand more significantly in a quarter profile in the presence of the tidal stripping. Those are the observed values. DF2 is prefers 2 is like 2.7 kpc, DF4 is about 2 kpc. So SIDM give you a better agreement. Right. So the lesson we learned from this exercise is the DF2, DF4 are most likely to be the satellite galaxies of the bigger elliptical galaxy. Okay, if this is the case, then they are more naturally to be realized in SIDM than CDM through tidal stripping. Okay. 2 more minutes. Right. So now let's move on to consider other systems. Right? So we go to even bigger systems like galaxy clusters. Those are the systems that have a halo mass around 10 to the 14 to 10 to the 15. It turns out some of the clusters we observe will resolve the clusters also preferred to have a quarter profile in the central region. But the core size is relatively small. If you want to use this SIDM idea to fit the data, we realize that the cross-section had to be 0.1 centimeter square per gram, which is about 1 order of magnitude smaller than the value you needed to explain galaxies. Right? So the galaxies are here. Clusters are here, so you wanted to stay on this curve. So there are 2 challenges. So one is you needed to have a larger cross-section. The other is we need to get the right velocity dependence. We can achieve this by considering a mediated particle. This particle mediates dark matter self-interactions. So it's light. So the interaction is just Yukawa potential, right? So it has three parameters: coupling constant, dark matter mass, and mediator mass. So let's say you want it to be ambitious to explain all the systems, including dwarf galaxies, low surface brightness galaxies, the galaxy clusters. And these are the curves that you can explain each of the object. But there's a closed region, right? This closed region that we can, the dark matter mass is about 15 GeV, the mediator mass is about 17 MeV. Of course, you fix this value, right? So this is a measurement of the dark matter mass and mediator mass without the assumption that dark matter has to interact with the standard model. It's purely from astrophysical observations. Right? So the point is, the nightmare scenario is not hopeless. So you may think this SIDMA idea is a bit weird, but this plot shows the neutron proton scattering cross-section as a function of velocity. It's from nuclear physics experiment measurement. So this curve is exactly what you needed to explain SIDM. You may shift this down a little bit, but you have a familiar example. So at in high energy physics, we build particle colliders to probe particle interactions, right? And to understand the dark matter, actually we have dark matter colliders in our universe on different energy scales. So the point is, taking all the observations on different scales, assume some kinematics or some modeling, then we might be able to measure particle physics parameters. So in this talk, I try to convince you that there are very strong hints for self-interacting dark matter, and it is possible that, highly possible, that the inner region of the halo is symbolized. It can explain, provide a unified explanation to dark matter distributions in satellite galaxies in the Milky Way, or to diffuse galaxies like DF2, DF4, as we discussed, spiral galaxies and the galaxy clusters. And it predicted novel dynamics, like SIDM symbolization in particular, with baryons, and also in the tidal field. I think it opens up new opportunities for collaborations among particle physicists, simulators, and observers, because you know, whatever you change in the particle physics here, you can change the halo structure, and you can lead it to the observational consequence. Thank you very much.
Questions?
Yeah.
I have a question about the plot between the epicenter and the central density.
Mm-hmm.
So is that common for other dark matter model, or that's for
this one?
Yeah.
So this is from observation, so it's right. Very minimal assumption going on, because to fit to the stellar kinematics, you have to assume some profile. So this we assume this isothermal profile fit to the data, this you get. So we also did an NFW profile fit, you get the same result. You just shift this curve a little bit, but you get the same result.
Yeah, what I was interested in is, does that make the tension of the CDM worse in the... So if you consider CDM,
mm-hmm.
which is in a closer, smaller epicenter,
mm-hmm.
does that make the tension worse, enhancing the central density by taking into account the tidal?
Yeah, so, right, good question. People have run simulations for CDM. At this point, they always get the opposite behavior in CDM simulations. The reason is, for the dwarf galaxies, has a smaller perlucenter, the tidal effect is strong. The central density is lower. So this is what you naively would expect. You should expect something like this, right? Expect a correlation instead of anti-correlation, right? So this is what people found. In CDM simulation, you get kind of correlation relation, not anti-correlation. For SIDM simulation, there's only two groups has a result. So one group get opposite correlation, the other group has not looked at the data very carefully, but they see the example of core collapse. So it remains to be seen that how can you produce this correlation, anti-correlation in both CDM model or SIDM model or any other model that you have. So I think this is kind of interesting and important point, because with a Gaia measurement, now you know the pericenter. You know the orbital information of satellite galaxies. So you can now just fit it to the density, right? So before the Gaia data, you just say, well, okay, I can fit to the density, that's it. But now it's not enough. You also have to see whether your orbital parameter is kind of consistent with the Gaia measurement, right? So this is another handle to distinguish different dark matter models.
So this may be a naive question, just reflecting my ignorance, but I mean, normally in cosmology, when we start adding more parameters to our, you know, our parameter set that which we want to describe the data, we normally try and ask, what is the evidence for this, right? And so I just wondered globally, you know, what is the evidence that adding this new parameter really does give me a better fit globally to the entire sort of data sets?
So zeroth order, what really happens is that the CDM density profile, this central density, is too high, too dense, to consistent with observations. So this is zeroth order answer. More, a little bit further is that if you look at the density profile predicted in CDM simulation, like NFW profile, this is very, very simple functional form. Right, but in observation, you see much diverse density profiles. Right, so that simple functional form cannot fit, explain to be consistent with the diverse dark matter distributions. So the assumption we made is that you have a collision. There's one parameter. If you put that, then you can get all the self-consistency, explain all the data. So that's it.
Okay.
So let me just add more. You are not convinced, I know, but.
It's a quantifiable thing, right? Like likelihoods or something.
Well, it's a good question.
Just, drawing lines through things, it looks nicer, but, I got to take into account weight of the error bars.
So, I actually do have a plot to show you. So we try to do this actually. So this is a CDF. So you take a large sample, about 100, 50 galaxies. Of course, they from different measurements and so on. So you have to bear those uncertainties and so on and so forth. So it may not be extremely meaningful in some sense because from data set, but you can do some analysis, right? So this plot shows the CDF. Okay, this is chi-square per degrees of freedom. This is for different models. Right? So this is NFW profile, looks like this. This is the Mond relation. This is DC14, is CDM simulations with strong baryonic feedback. The green curve is SIDM. So this gives you some idea, how much this model can do.
I also just have a simple question. So what is, first of all, what are, in terms of the details, what is this particle physics candidate and what is sort of its thermal history that we are expecting? Is there the early universe production history any different?
So the simplest model you can imagine is that there's dark matter particles, there's a mediated particle. This is also true for WIMP, right? WIMP is like, let's say Higgs mixing, the Higgs mediator. You also have this kind of interaction in principle, right? But the difference is the WIMP, the mass scale is on the weak scale, 100 GeV issue. In this model, you need to have a hierarchy, okay, between the dark matter mass and the mediated mass, at least for the simplest setup you have. And it can be like 15 GeV, for example, the mediated mass is, 17 MeV. Now, you can ask, What is the thermal history of this model? So you can imagine that, you know, this mediated particle may do kinetic mixing with standard model particles, and all those dark matter particles may produce in the early universe, just like, you know, typical like mediated the light mediated model, right? So this is kind of one scenario you could imagine. But now we know that the bonds are becomes very strong from direct detection because this mediated mass is light. So you may think that, oh, maybe you can produce those things in a dark sector. You know, Jesse was talking about this, you know, in everything can be hidden, right? There's a hidden thermal bath for the evolution. And maybe after reheating, the inflaton can also decay to the dark sector particles to heat up this dark sector, dark matter candidate and the mediated particle can have independent evolution history. But one thing I think which is very interesting is the following. So this mediated mass has a mass about 10 MeV issue. If this mediated particle was stable, then it will overclose the universe, right? If there's the hidden sector, then you want this mediator to decay to massless degrees of freedom. So you have to introduce massless degrees of freedom. So you have a contribution to an effector, okay? This massless mediator can also couple to the dark matter particles to cause the acoustic damping in the dark sector, so it can suppress the small scale structure. So there's a bigger program now actually on this, that how to search for these signals from different observations. Excuse me?
Sorry. You don't actually need massless particles. If you have them, then it's fine, you can get these things. You don't actually need them. You can get this just from the just by feeding it from the standard model without being in trouble with observations. There's still some space.
Oh, you mean the dark matter can interact?
Yeah, the dark sector. You can feed the whole dark sector from the standard model through the same mediator coupling to the standard model that lets it decay.
Yeah, no, you could do it. But yeah, that's right. But I'm saying that there's some constraints on the how strong the coupling can be, right?
For sure.
Yeah, right.
So what is the cross section you need for this compared to the constraint from the bullet cluster?
So the cross section we need is for galactic scale galaxies about 2 or 3 centimeters square per gram. On a cluster scale, actually, the observation shows that the cross-section has to be around 0.1 issue. The bullet cluster constraint is at least one order of magnitude larger than this.
Okay.
Okay.
So what is there a path where you could just improve on, like, is there any scenario where you could, I don't know, stack multiple clusters that look like the bullet cluster and push that constraint until it constrains?
Yeah, so I think it's very hard to get 0.1. I know people are doing this, and the limit could be the bullet cluster constraint is like 2 centimeters square per gram issue. You can push it to maybe 1, maybe 0.5. I think it's very hard to push it that limit, 0.1 issue. This 0.1 is from the fact that so we take like a 7 well-resolved galaxy clusters. So in the out region is really well fitted with like weak learning data with NFW. Look at the motion of BCGs in the cluster. And if you fit, the motion prefers to have a quarter profile, but the core size has to be very, very small. It would be like a 10 KPC issue for a cluster. That translating into the limit on the cross-section is more like a 0.1 issue.
Okay.
But this limit already is stronger than the bullet cluster.
So you've been showing a lot of comparisons between self-interacting dark matter and cold collisionist dark matter, but of course the more accurate comparison would be dark collisionist dark matter with baryons versus
yes.
self-interacting dark matter with baryons.
Yes.
And you've showed how, you know, so it's the interaction with baryons that gives you this diversity, but that same interaction with baryons will give you diversity in collisionist dark matter too. How much
Can you quantify
the improvement
over
just adding all of the richness of
baryon
physics?
Yeah, let me show you this. So just finish your paper, actually. So we just getting bigger fight with, you know, CDM people. So let me show you. So the feedback, you know, the effect of feedback depends on your feedback model. Some feedback is strong, so some feedback is weak. So I show you some results with weak feedback. If the feedback is weak, then it does not change the halo structure at all. Now let's consider a scenario where the feedback is strong, right? So which means it really, the change of the potential due to star formation can be very dramatic, it can be very significant. So strong, it can blow away dark matter from the central region, right? So this is a plot, this is 8 outliers I've discussed. You see the gray curve? The gray curve is from hydro simulation with strong feedback, so strong to blow away dark matter. So you can, this is a total, okay, including both baryon and dark matter. You can see that the feedback is so strong you can produce a quarter profile, right? So these two galaxies, you can fit it, okay? Because these two galaxies prefer to have larger density cores. But those simulations cannot populate galaxies with high baryon densities. The reason is, okay, the most likely, the reason is, if your feedback is strong, you blow away dark matter, you blow away stars as well. Because in those simulations, stars just like behave like collisionless particles, dark matter particles. So you blow away stars, you blow away everything, right? So you have two extremes. In weak, with weak feedback, the halo does not change as cuspy as you would expect. If you have strong feedback, the feedback is too strong to produce a course, but they cannot produce populated galaxies with a high dark matter density, or baryon density, high surface brightness galaxies, right? So this is the result. So this is DC14 model, is the feedback model. And you can see the fit, it's improvement compared to NFW profile because of the core formation, but it cannot accommodate the galaxies with a high baryon density. And this plot shows the dark matter, you know, the slope as a function of this stellar mass to the halo mass. Actually, this band shows from feedback with strong, CDM simulation with strong feedback, and you can see that if you increase the stellar mass, the density profile becomes more and more core-like. Eventually, it will turn over. But the scatter is much bigger than the size of the band, and that's essentially what cannot accommodate the whole diversity. Yeah.
All right, I think we need to move on. Sorry.
Yeah.
So let's thank Hyper again. Okay.